In the wake of the tragic death of Gary Speed over the weekend, there has been huge coverage of this whole question of self-inflicted death, etc. Now, I've been trying to get behind some of the thinking, but lacking expertise myself, I thought it was appropriate I should speak with somebody who deals in this world. And I have with me consultant Philip McGarry, a psychiatrist, to try and help us to understand something of the possible isolation, loneliness, whatever, of people like Gary Speed. Sir, could you give us some insight into the mind of the person who ends up engaging in self-inflicted death?
Well, first of all, I wouldn't want to have too much conjecture specifically on Gary Speed. We don't know all the details of this tragic case. But in general, it is the case that, well, there's been a lot of focus, quite rightly, among suicides in young men. The actually most common age group for suicide is between 15 and 44. And we do know that men in their 30s and 40s are at significant risk of depression and subsequently suicide. And in many cases, people who made the outside world present as appearing entirely normal actually are suffering inside. Many people will be aware of the suicide of the German goalkeeper Robert Enke 2 years ago. And in fact, a book has just come out by someone who knew him very well, and he was planning to collaborate with him on his autobiography when his career finished. And the book that has come out illustrates how at times this man, who was an exceptionally good goalkeeper for Barcelona, in fact, before he went to Germany, how at times in games he spoke of being paralysed with anxiety. Now, that may not have come across to the crowd, to his colleagues, to the manager, but he spoke of being absolutely paralysed and terrified of the responsibility of being the last line of defence. And it would seem that he perceived he could not admit to being weak, to suffering from anxiety or depression or self-doubt. And that makes a point that many men do feel. It is very difficult to be honest and admit that you are suffering from a psychological problem. It would be seen as a some kind of defeat, that there's something fundamentally wrong or flawed in you as a person, as a human being.
Now, earlier in our conversation, you used another manifestation of illness in a human being. For example, somebody with a broken leg. What's the difference between somebody with a broken leg allowing the world to see the fact that his leg is broken, and yet the illness inside somebody's head remaining secretive and nobody prepared to admit to that?
It's very commonly the case that people will indeed show off the plaster on their leg, or perhaps will even show you the scar if they've had an operation. But the same person may very well not want to tell anybody, even very close family and friends, that they've had a condition like depression. Now, what's behind that? To a degree, it may be that people feel, if my leg is damaged, it doesn't affect me as a human being, as a person. But if I say to you, I've got crippling anxiety, I have got severe depression, and even thoughts of suicide, that in some way, that marks me down as a bad person, as a weak person, as something to be ashamed of. There's some kind of mark or stigma about me. Having a broken leg is seen as something of just bad luck, an accident. But having depression perhaps is seen by people who have it as some sense of weakness in themselves, that would feel embarrassed or humiliated about other people being aware of that.
You're a professional psychiatrist. You meet people every day, a lot of days, who are depressed. Presume for a moment that you had an opportunity of speaking to somebody like Gary Speed in the previous 24 hours to his self-inflicted death. Would you know that there was anything irregular, strange going on in the mind of that man?
Not necessarily. Indeed, Gary Speed, of course, was on television a number of hours before he died. And in fact, it's not uncommon for cases of suicide for the family, and for professionals to say, I saw the person within hours, a few days, and everything seemed normal. Because people who are depressed or anxious can often present themselves as being quite well. They can put up a front. And part of the challenge for doctors and other specialists is trying to get behind that front. Indeed, quite a few people who do take their own lives, and in particular young people, will have seen their doctor in the previous few weeks, but they have not indicated that they're suffering psychologically, and very good experienced staff quite often don't pick up. And that's why the plea must always be to people who are feeling down or depressed, please, please tell someone, whether a relative or a close friend, or of course seek expert advice. In particular, go and see your general practitioner, the first port of call.
You would have seen, Doctor, what everybody else saw about Gary Speed, incredibly handsome, fit young man, 42, wife, beautiful wife, children, million-dollar man. And yet he kills himself. Is there a rational explanation?
It's always hard to understand each individual case, but it is very clear that having all the external benefits of good relationships and money and a job doesn't always make us happy. And indeed, quite often, it is a contrast between, on the one hand, feeling I've got everything going for me, and yet inside I feel really dreadfully bad. And in fact, having all those advantages is not in any sense a great protector. In the same way that, for example, there's evidence that suicide peaks in the springtime and not in the wintertime. And the argument there is that in winter, everybody's feeling down and depressed. But maybe in the springtime, other people are starting to talk about the summer and holidays. And inside, you're feeling you can't join in that, that you're different from other people, that the reality doesn't match the expectations. So being well off, having an apparently comfortable lifestyle, doesn't necessarily protect you. All of us are vulnerable to psychological problems and depression and the potential for doing bad things to yourself.
We know that quite often self-inflicted death, suicide can be related to drugs, alcoholism, addiction, etc. But is it a case, though, in some cases, of the mind, the brain, actually killing the human being itself?
We know that among younger people in particular, factors such as alcohol, drugs, and life stresses such as unemployment and trouble with the law are particularly high risk factors. But as you get older, into your 30s and 40s, and indeed much later life, depression is much more likely to be what we might say is primarily biological, where the does appear at some level to be some kind of biochemical imbalance in the brain. And in those cases, psychiatric treatment, in particular with medication, can be particularly valuable. In younger people, quite often suicide comes in the context of a reaction to very difficult life events. In older people, quite often it appears to come out of the blue. And in that kind of situation, there is a clearer association between depression and other illnesses, which does need quite often active treatment with medication, not by any means always, of course, but medication more likely to have a primary role in depression in the middle-aged or older person.
Doctor, could I just ask you, though, if you take somebody like Gary Speed, would it be his pride, or what would dictate to him that he shouldn't approach somebody and say, listen, gosh, I've got the old black dog around here, I'm in a really bad, bad way? What would stop that person telling somebody?
I think people in general, while things have moved on, still find it difficult to accept, first of all, in themselves, and secondly to others, that they do need help with a psychological problem. It can be seen as something that perhaps is not really a manly thing to do. And that's why it is encouraging that more people are coming out. For example, over the weekend, the last 48 hours, Stan Collymore, another very well-known footballer, has been tweeting very actively about the fact that he's been more anxious and depressed over the last number of days. With the case a number of years ago of the Danish Prime Minister saying, I'm taking 2 months out because I'm clinically depressed. He took 2 months out, got treated, got better, and got back into work. Equally, one of the state premiers in Australia did the same thing, went out, got better, and came back. And that's a very important model, that depression is very treatable. But no matter who you are, be you the highest in the land, depression is a condition that can affect you. But it is very, very treatable. But it is important that people are able to articulate their distress and express that to people around them. And if it is quite severe, again, please go probably in the first instance to their general practitioner, who will be able to manage the condition themselves or, if necessary, arrange other support for the person.
You're a practitioner, you're a psychiatrist. In terms of being remedial for people suffering from depression, is it a question of psychotherapy and drugs, or does one work on its own?
In psychiatry, there are three broad modes of treatment. One is psychotherapy, which is, I suppose, a fancy word for what Freud called the talking cure. Secondly, there are medications. And thirdly, there's looking at the social aspect. People come to me, for example, and I would say, you do need to look at the relationship with your partner, you need to look at your drinking, at your job situation. And quite often it's a combination of medication and talking and the other aspect. In some cases, talking on its own is sufficient. And for the milder depressions in particular, the talking and social approaches are quite often sufficient on their own. But in the more severe depressions, medication takes a more prominent role, but quite often along with the psychological treatments. It's not either or necessarily, quite often is one plus the other.
Mr. McGarry, you're the healer. People come here to be healed. Do you ever fear that you could be a victim yourself of this?
It is recognised that doctors are probably more prone to depression and indeed suicide than other professions. And all of us have to be aware that none of us is invulnerable. All of us have our pressures in life, and all of us have the potential to develop psychological problems. The evidence is that at some point in your life, one person in four is likely to develop psychological problems, mostly not of a very severe nature, fortunately. But even when it is more severe, the evidence, in fact, is that treatment does work very well. You can get better from depression, and that's the evidence time and time again. Depression is a very treatable condition, but the difficulty is getting people to come to the first step of acknowledging the problem.
Isn't that really where it is? Admitting that you've got a problem.
Yes, because no matter how good a psychiatrist I am, I can't read anybody's mind. My job as a psychiatrist is to help the patient talk to me about what is really going on inside their head. Once they do that, then we're halfway, even more than halfway, on the road to resolving it.
Dr. Philip McGarry has been my guest this afternoon. He's a very skilled, seasoned psychiatrist. I just want to say thanks to him for bringing us into his world. And I hope as a result of this conversation, which I've had with Dr. McGarry, that perhaps he'll give you some encouragement to step forward and share your problem with a friend or with your GP with a view to ultimately getting you back on the road. Good afternoon, Dr. McGarry.
Thank you.